Give him a round of applause, please. Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. Well, this is really a dream come true for me because I love teaching, I love coaching, and the really awesome thing about that is the fact that I'm great at this. And I can say that because I am terrible at most things that precede and follow. So my wife is in the back. She will tell you of all the things that I am terrible at. And we don't need to get into all that, though. But I'm really grateful to have my bride here today. And this is just a culmination of so many things that I'm just so blessed to be able to do. So this is my contact information. I don't have anything to sell you today. I'm not here for that. I get to teach and I get to live in this. So I know it's 8:30, so we're going to bang out 50 push-ups right where you're at. Go ahead and do that. No, I'm just kidding. But but I do have some books here that I can give away. So yes, I am going to bribe you for your participation. This is the book that I'm most proud of. It's the Time Wealthy Investor 2.0, and it's going to talk about everything that we're going over today in terms of the VIP method. So. Yes, I am going to bribe you for your participation because I know how this all works. So, what year did I get in the Marine Corps?
97.
All right, 97. See how easy that works? Like literally, it's not difficult. All you got to do is just chime in, raise your hand, whatever else it is. So, yes, my moniker is the Landlord Coach, which Vina, who knows Vina? Is anyone familiar with Vina? Okay, right? So, she absolutely hates the L word. So I am changing my name just for the next 87 minutes. So I am the Rental Housing Provider Coach. Unfortunately, that URL doesn't kind of just roll off the tongue. So please let Vina know that I have officially changed my name for the next 86 minutes or so. All right. So back several years ago, our 16-year-old, before he knew everything, right? Does anybody have any teenagers at home? Okay, right. So we've got a 13 and 16-year-old at home. So fortunately, now they know everything. So we're done as parents, right? Thank God. It's all easier from this point, right? Right, and I'm stupid, and I don't know anything. Dad, you don't get it. But no, we are very blessed with two amazing kids. Yeah, and so the oldest wanted to learn how to play chess. So I was, taught him the basics. And he was, we played probably 20 or so games, and the games were not very long. And I wasn't holding back on him. I was just playing a game, right? And I've been playing for a long time. And after about the 20th game or so, and I said, you want to play again? He said, no, what's the point of playing? You always win. I said, son, because I taught you how to play. I didn't teach you how to win. That's the analogy I want to use for you guys today, because so many people are out there playing in the rental business and they don't know how to win. And it's not difficult. It's not like, oh, well, I'm going to just turn it over to a property manager and everything will be great. Guys, here's the thing. Because many of them don't have systems in place, it's very difficult to have a business that's going to run well. And has anybody ever experienced bad service in a restaurant? Okay, but do you have to run a restaurant to know what bad service looks like? No. So here's what I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to make this point now, that every problem that you have when it's a problem of communication, it always comes up in bad infrastructure or bad process. I'm going to make this point a little bit later. But it always comes up, if you have a dearth of infrastructure, a lack of infrastructure, or lack of process, it always shows up as bad communication. I'll give you an example. You're getting bad service. The hostess seats you, and everybody else around you is this buzz of activity, right? And what are you trying to communicate at that moment in time? You're trying to communicate your order to the kitchen. Right? Does that make sense? So you're trying to communicate your order to the kitchen, but no one's coming and getting that. So could you say that that's either an infrastructure problem or a process problem? Either they didn't schedule they maybe have software or some system that schedules the waitress or waiter at that table in that moment of time, right? Now, making a bigger example out of this than it is, but the point is, there's no one there to catch that. That's the problem. So it's either, now if you have a an expediter or a manager that comes around and says, have you guys been taken care of yet? And you're like, well, no, we're trying, they haven't even taken our order, we haven't even gotten drinks yet or whatever. That's part of the infrastructural process, right? That's part of the process to say, wait, I don't see water glasses on their table. Someone hasn't taken care of them yet, right? It can be a small infrastructural process process piece to make sure people are taken care of. All right. So, how many here would like to make more money? Okay, every hand goes up. How many people would like to have more time? Okay, I love that. How would you like to have both? Wouldn't that be a win? That's what I want to teach you to do today, because I think we're confusing, and Dave's a good friend of mine, Dave Peters, who's kind of living his ideal life now. He's got the money he needs to live the life that he wants, and not focusing just on income generation, but also on life output. So what I hope to accomplish for you today, let's get clarity around your vision. Let's get clarity around exactly what it is that you're trying to accomplish in your life. Next, we're going to organize your business. We're going to organize this specifically using the infrastructure, the VIP method, the vision infrastructure process method. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to generate more cash flow and freedom in your life. So time wealth. This is where the audience participation piece comes in. And remember, I've got some books up here to bribe you. And it's a very low standard. But what... what do you think time wealth means? Let me see some hands. What do you think what time wealth means? Yes, sir.
Having time to do what's important.
Having time to do what's important to you. Okay, so here's the thing. I've got the time wealthy investor and I've got the judge. Which one would you like?
Time
wealthy investor. Okay, the judge is meant to be given away, like, you know, when I go to RIAs and stuff like that. There you go. And if you want me to sign that, I will. Just know that it makes the book worthless. Even more so than it is now. No. but then you can't even give it away, actually, with your name on it. So you use it as a coaster. All right. But no, it is honestly really, really, I'm very, very proud of that book. But time wealth, it's having complete and total control of your calendar. Time wealth is having complete and total control of your calendar. Now, what would you do with that time wealth? What could you do with that time wealth? What could you do with more control of your calendar? Yes, ma'am. You can travel. You can spend time with your family. Yes, sir.
Focus on your immediate important tasks or visions.
You can focus on your vision stuff. Okay. What else? Over here. The bride side of the aisle. Yeah. What's that? You could find more deals. Exactly. The point is, once you have complete and total control of your calendar, you can go do more stuff. Right? It's good to see you. Here's the thing. Does anybody understand what's amazing about real estate? There is a million ways to make $1 million in real estate. Isn't that awesome? You know what sucks about real estate? Is there's a million ways to make $1 million in real estate. That sucks. You're like, because you're driving down the road and you're like, I could get into billboard signs. Absolutely I could. And then before that thought has even left your head, now all of a sudden you have another thought about something else, and you're like, I could totally start a software company. Absolutely. Right? And then you get home, like, honey, we're starting a software company. And then they go, should I add that to the billboard company and the dog walking company and the goldfish breeding company and the other companies that we started? Adrian, this is not directed at you, I promise you. But the point is, we get to be focused exactly what it is that we want, but when you have time wealth, you can go do other things. Now, who has heard this massively crazy idea that if you have multiple streams of revenue, it's not a bad thing, right? Okay, yep, I get it. We've all read The Millionaire Mind, The Millionaire Next Door. We get that. But the point is, you don't want to do it all at one time, because then your life sucks. So how about... crazy idea. How about we get this business up and running where it doesn't need our constant input, right? And then you can go maybe do something else. For example, what if you had such a well-running real estate business By the way, you don't need hundreds, but if you had a well-running real estate business, so you could maybe go write books, and then maybe go to a RIA conference and be able to teach other people. For example, I know it's crazy, but this is what I'm talking about. Because right now, my phone's not going to ring like it used to back in 2007. There's no way in the world I could be doing this if I was structured the way I was back in 2007. My life was a barn fire. It was a disaster. So, you know, where my phone just rang constantly, and thank God it was really kind of the days before text messaging got really prolific. But now I can't imagine what my life would look like if it was just, you know, and I know some of you have, are there. I promise you it can get better, and we're going to talk about that today. All right, so the one of the things that's cool about this is, you know, we're all trying to get to the hundred rentals or whatever it is. It's really funny. I go and I travel around to RIA groups all over, and invariably people are in the room and we're networking, and I say to someone who's either a wholesaler or just getting started, I'm like, oh, you know, what is it you're trying to accomplish? And they always say, well, I'm trying to get 100 rental properties. It's always in multiples of 25, by the way. I don't know if it's because it's a prime number or whatever. It's not a prime number, but I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about 25, but it's magical. So I'm going to get into, I'm going to get into 100 rental properties. I go, wow. Or 75 or 50, something like that. It's always multiples of 25, though. And I say, okay, so you want to get into 100 rental properties. I was like, all right, cool. 99 wouldn't do it. But, I mean, 99 would do it, but, like, really?
Nope.
93 wouldn't do it? And I'll continue on down that way until what they recognize is that they're confusing the level of life output. They're confusing the number of rental properties with the life output. They think that that's going to buy them. Do you understand what I'm going to say that one more time? They're confusing the number of rental units with the life output. They think that that's going to buy them. And that's a wrong approach. Now, if someone said to me, well, no, coach, I'm going to, I want $21,117.14, they thought that through. Right? They thought that through. And if they could do that with, say, 18 rental properties generating $3,000 a month in rental and rents, not only is your life way less complicated, but now you're living your vision. Now you're living, I mean, especially when you have it defined, it's not just for the sake of having more, but we all want cool stuff. We all want the big house that curves with the earth. We all want, you know, nice stuff. But what we don't want, I think we can all agree, is you don't want a boat that sits on a trailer in your driveway. Look at how big that thing is. Can you guys see that? I want to make a point here. So how long is a driveway? Like, that's like 40-ish feet. And it's into the street. So the HOA, I'm sure, loves this person, right? And where do you think this person is? They're at work trying to pay for this thing. So they're not time wealthy. They are time weary. And that's what we want to talk about today, is that as cool as it is to have stuff like this, it's not cool when your boat is sitting in the marina and you can't use it, right? Or worse, you're paying slip fees, right? It's like, yeah, I want an airplane. You know what's not cool? An airplane that sits in a hangar, because you got to pay hangar fees, right? Or all this other stuff. So that's what we're going to talk about. So let me ask you this: what's going on here in this photo? He's collecting rent. What's wrong with you people? What's going on here? What's this couple doing?
Whoa.
He's what's that? He's fixing his maintenance problems. This crowd is way too fired up for this early in the morning. Oh, actually, wait a minute. Are you guys just coming in from last night? Because that's a whole different crowd. No. Because it's like I'm smelling like some bad decisions and just a whiff of regret. That's what I'm, yeah, just a hint of shame. Some of you have no shame. But no, he's collecting rent. They're collecting rent. What's going on here?
He collected and he ain't thinking about it.
Collecting rent, right? This dog, this chihuahua, done a great thing. What's going on here? That's right, collecting rent. What's going on here? No, it's a father blowing bubbles with his son. What's wrong with you people? Seriously. You guys, what is wrong with you? No, it's not all about real estate, guys. And this is what I want to talk about today, is the vision infrastructure process method. And we're going to get into this, and I know this is going to get deep, and this is going to go quick, because I've only got a certain amount of time. It always seems to go quicker up here, and I'm glad that you guys are in a good mood this morning. But vision specifically, we're going to talk about vision, the vision infrastructure process method, and that's what I talked about in the Time Multi Investor 2.0. So I've got some other books here that I'm going to be giving away again. So show of hands really quick. Let's see here. Well, I'm going to come back to that. So the vision infrastructure process method is vision specifically what it is that you're trying to accomplish. It has absolutely nothing to do with your business. Okay? So say that again. It has nothing to do with my business. Ready? It has nothing to do with my business. Because oftentimes they say, oh, what's your vision? What are you trying to do? Well, I really want to get 100 rental properties. No. Let's go back. What is it you're specifically trying to do? Well, I want to have a chihuahua that stands on the back of my Great Dane. That's a pretty cool trick, all right? But I want to specifically, what is it you're trying to accomplish? What is it you're trying to do? Vision is specifically about what it is you're trying to accomplish. Okay? So, vision, for example, let's pretend that your vision is to lay on the beach for 2 months out of the year rubbing cocoa butter on your belly. Okay? Maybe not a great visual, but a great vision. Alright? The reason why vision has to come first is because the next piece in the vision infrastructure process method is infrastructure. Now, infrastructure is the bones of the business. Infrastructure is the bones of the business. It's the desks, the chairs, the software, but it's also the asset class selection. So the asset class selection is, what would be an example of an asset class selection? Well, an asset class. What's an example? Who said single family homes? Okay. I'm assuming you want the 10 nothing investor? All right.
Love it.
Absolutely. Again, I can sign that and make it worthless if you'd like. All right. So, yes, the single family dwellings. Another one would be what?
Apartments.
Another ones would be?
Self-storage,
exactly. How about
mobile
homes? If we only knew somebody that spoke on mobile homes. So, you know, say, actually we got confused for one another yesterday. I thought that was pretty cool. I'm like, absolutely, I'm 3 inches taller and, you know, have a body fat index of, you know, whatever, like 8%, absolutely. No, but infrastructure is the bones of the business. It's also the asset class selection. And why is that important? Why is the asset class selection important when you're building your infrastructure?
If you're doing too many different projects, you can't focus on
it. Absolutely. If you focus on too many different asset classes, now you can have similar infrastructure, but I'm just here to tell you that if I was managing mobile home parks, the infrastructure would be a little bit different if I was managing self-storage units or parking garages or whatever the asset class selection is. Right? Does that make sense? And that's where a lot of people struggle. That's why I have done some commercial stuff in the past. I don't do it anymore. You know why? It was too different. It was too far off. And I'm telling you, if you really want to live the vision that you want, you don't have to have 92 different types of asset classes. It makes it much more complex. And why is that? Because of infrastructure. All right? Why Starbucks, like them or love, you know, hate them, I don't really care for Starbucks. I think it's overly priced and they don't like guns, so they can, whatever, go screw yourself. But I'm not a Starbucks person, right? But the thing is, they have great infrastructure for serving coffee. Do you ever think they're going to serve lobster bisque? No! Why? Because they're not good at that. If they don't have an infrastructure for that, could they? Absolutely. But they probably would have to do something different, right? It's just different. All right, so the infrastructure piece, this is the when you're thinking about infrastructure, the reason why infrastructure comes next. So think about this for a second. What was our vision that we talked about earlier on? What was the vision that we talked about? We're laying on the beach rubbing cocoa butter on our belly for 2 months out of the year? Okay? If you design an infrastructure that's going to require you to return emails and phone calls in a timely manner, that's going to suck for you when you're trying to lay on the beach rubbing cocoa butter on your belly. Does that make sense? Okay? So you really have to have a really clear vision in terms of what it is that you want to do, first and foremost, and then we're going to take that infrastructure and process piece, and we're going to reverse engineer a business that delivers that vision. Isn't that cool? It's not complex. But we're making it complex because we're, you know, mixing our business vision and personal vision. No, it should not mix. They are different. They are absolutely different. Because I promise you, and I'm not to go down this rabbit hole too far, but I really feel that the vision is really just simply a keyhole that you look through to see your purpose. Let me say that one more time. I really feel that your vision is just a keyhole that you look through to see your purpose. Your purpose is why God put you here. And that's why I can say, I'm a great teacher. I'm a great coach. What I am not great at, send me an email and you'll see how bad I am at administrative stuff. That's why I have a chief of staff. Because she checks my email for me and says, hey, these are a couple of ones that you have to get back to. Right? Because I'm terrible at email. I'm terrible at most things that precede and follow teaching and coaching. Right? But I can own that. Like, that's why I get to own that part of it that I'm like, I'm great at. So I get to be great at some other stuff. Or at least I get to be good at some other stuff that's in my vision, which is, having a great relationship with my bride who's sitting in the back of the room today, which is amazing that we get to do this now. Because every single day it's part of my vision, guess what we get to do? We get to have lunch with each other. And for those of you who may be in a marriage or you're kind of like, it's like not doing it for you anymore, have lunch with your spouse every day. Man, those 40 minutes of eating leftovers and watching Criminal Minds reruns, they've done more for our marriage. And you laugh, but sometimes we sit and we don't say a word, and sometimes we sit and jabber like two teenagers. It's just amazing. And, I have to compete with Hank Boyd right now, because when in Chicago PD, but kidding aside, that is probably one of the best things that we could have done to get in terms of getting our marriage, but living that vision, that piece of our vision. All right. So the next piece here we have is process. Now, process is how you do stuff. Process is how you do stuff. So in terms of, this is where the gurus come in. Now, I'm going to make a kind of a distinction here. I really think, and this is just my definition, so please don't run out and say this is the definition of the world, but I really feel like the word coach has been way overused. Because I really feel that coach really is someone who holds you accountable. Really, truly holds you accountable. My wrestling coach held us accountable. And we did not always like him. And your coach should be someone that is not afraid to hold you accountable. But there are gurus out there who are really good at this one narrow area. And I think they are good teachers, they know this one thing, but they're not coaches. And I just want to make sure that I'm making that distinction. Because it's hard being a coach. It's really hard. Because you have to hold someone accountable that you kind of like. I mean, I really don't like Dave, but I don't have a problem holding him accountable. Right? No, Dave, in spite of the fact that he's in the Navy, that's okay. I don't mind that. But Dave and I, kidding aside, we would hold one another accountable. If I was about to do something really stupid, Dave would go, Mark, that's really stupid. What are you doing? But that to me is what a coach does. And it's really hard, especially when you like the person that you're coaching. So the process part, this specific area, the process stuff is what you're going to learn from the gurus, right? It's like the tacks, the tips, the tricks, like how to do the individual things. Now, in the Time Wealthy Investor 2.0, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of the tips and tricks on how to set up infrastructure, how to set up process and all that other stuff. And I do coach on that, right? But specifically, and there's a lot of stuff that you're going to learn way more than what I could ever teach you. You know, I know there's other folks here today that could teach you lots of tips and tricks and tactics, really tactical stuff. I don't teach that way. I teach more strategic, top down. What are you trying to accomplish? When someone comes to me and says, hey, coach, how do I X, Y, Z? And I go, well, what do you think my first answer is going to be? What do you think my first answer is going to be? What are you trying to accomplish? What's that? What's your vision? Exactly. Exactly. In fact, that's book worthy. What would you like? I've got one copy left of the Time Wealthy Investor. Would you like that? Okay. All right. All I have left is The Judge. So very good. So what is your vision? And the reason why the vision, it keeps coming back to vision, is because the vision is the main circuit breaker for which all decisions are going to be made. Right? So if it's not in alignment with your vision, now let me go back to this, I'm going to use this quick example. Let's say, so what's your name? Ozzy? Okay, Ozzy. So you and I are going to go on a road trip, and we're going from Detroit, Michigan to Key West, Florida. Detroit, Michigan to Key West, Florida. All right? So our vision is to be in Key West, Florida, sitting on two beach chairs, holding two drinks in our hands, watching the sun go down. Right? It's a good vision. Okay? So here we are. So our goals along the way, our waypoints along the way, are going to be our goals, right? So we've got goals along the way to get to our vision. So vision and goals are different. So our goals would be to get to Indianapolis, maybe Chattanooga, Atlanta, and then we're going to drive straight through from Atlanta to Key West. Make sense? Maybe a stop in Miami. Okay? So Oz and I were like, as we're driving, we're halfway between Indy and Chattanooga, and he says, you know what? I know this kid from third grade. He lives in St. Louis. What a hoot he is. We should go hang out with him. It would be a lot of fun. Right? So Isaac says, oh, and I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second. Is that in alignment with our vision? Is that in alignment with our vision? Our vision is to do what?
Key West.
Key West. And you want me to go backwards and go 90 degrees to the right, hours out of our way to go hang out with a kid in third grade? Dude, that's not in line with our vision. Now, I'm using that analogy, but how often are we, when our vision isn't clear, how easy it is to get distracted? Where are my mom's in the room? Where isn't good and high? Where are my mom's in the room? Mom's in the room. Mom's in the room. Okay. So, I will tell you, I'm a little physically bigger than some of the moms in the room. Okay? I'm not a big dude. But I'll tell you one thing, I would not get in between her and her kid. Hell no. And you know why? Because I believe that with every good mom, that the most dangerous place on the planet is between the mom and her kid. I mean, it just is. Imagine if your life's vision was that way. You're like, I don't care. This is the thing that I'm doing. If you've ever been seen a mom who's lost her kid in a mall, right? You don't get in front of her. You walk with her if you can keep up, but you don't get in front of her. Right? Imagine having a purpose and vision about your life that clear. Just stop and think about that for a second. You go, no, I am not going to allow myself to be distracted. I'm not going to allow myself to be derailed by nonsense. I'm not going to spend 3 hours on Instagram this morning or allow myself to get sucked into 9 hours of TikTok videos and on and on and on. So imagine if you allowed that level of clarity to exist in your life, where now you're not going to allow that to happen. Would that be pretty cool? Okay, would that be pretty cool? Absolutely, it would be pretty cool. Because that right there is the ferocity of purpose that really ignites you and gets you to do exactly what you want. And as a result, I get to have lunch with a pretty cool chick every single day. Isn't that awesome? Who, by the way, is way out of my league. Don't tell her that, though. All right. She knows. Damn it. All right. Very cool. All right, so what I'm going to talk about for the rest of my time here, we're going to talk a little bit about purpose. We're going to get into this. And I'm going to start off with the leasing cycle. This was called the landlord cycle, but I renamed it in honor of Venus so she didn't eviscerate me. But it is actually the leasing cycle. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through day zero to day 365. Who here currently has some rentals? Okay, excellent. That's great. This is going to be super relevant to you then. Super relevant to you. Sometimes when I speak to other crowds, this isn't as relevant because they don't have rental properties yet, so they don't know what it's like. Let me ask you this. This is the best feeling in the world, right? When you're driving away from your rental, right? You're driving away from your rental, just had a move-in, right? You hand them keys, they hand you a check, right? Best feeling in the world, you're driving away. And isn't this an amazing feeling when you're almost home, you've been driving 10, 20 minutes, and the phone rings, and it's the resident. Best feeling in the world, isn't it? Because you know what they're going to say. They're going to say, what's your name?
Sharon.
Sharon. They're going to say, Sharon, this is literally the best place I've ever rented.
They're going to ask if they have a dog.
This is the best place I've ever rented. My husband loves it so much he wants to pay you more money. Yeah. That's generally what happens, right? No, what you do is you look at that phone and you go, I'm going to change my name. I'm going to change my name and pretend I don't speak English anymore because I don't want to answer that call. And you just go, oh, please let it be something easy, right? And sometimes it is, but it's usually something more like, my wife is so upset, she's literally driving away in the U-Haul right now. She will not move into this place because whatever, right? It's the worst feeling in the world. So I'm going to talk about something along those lines between day one and day seven. But from day zero to day one is what we're going to start off right here. So from day zero to day one, you're going to, that is, day zero is what? What is day zero? Right, someone is handing you keys. Now that could be at a closing table, that could be the resident turning their possession over to you, that's you getting an eviction, whatever that is, but you are now making $0 in your rental. So your job is to get from day zero to day one as quickly as possible. I'd agree. Okay. So I want you to shift your mindset to something different. Remember, we talked about shifting your mindset earlier where you were, you know, about the mom, like, and you know, having a real clear vision, right? So I want you to shift your mindset to right now, you no longer are purveyors of rental properties, but you sell time. You sell time. Because once that time is gone, can you sell unsold inventory? No, you can't sell unsold inventory. You can't sell yesterday. If it was vacant yesterday, you're maybe getting yesterday back. Right? So now you're playing from behind. Your job is to get that property rented as quickly as possibly can. Now, how are we going to do that? Now, the way that I do this is through a vacancy checklist. And we're going to be going through, this specifically. And you guys are going to have to, modify this a little bit to your specific infrastructure and technique. So I kept this a little vague. All right. So we're going to start down this vacancy checklist. First of all, possession is received. First thing, you get possession, right? So someone is handing you keys. All right. Someone is handing you keys. Now the next thing is that forwarding address, keys, and remotes. Why is that important?
Bill or send them a deposit.
Right, you send them a bill or send them a deposit for forwarding address, right? Does that make sense? But what's up there that often gets missed on that second line item?
Forwarding
address, yes, but beyond that, what else gets missed? How much does a remote cost? A lot of freaking money. Like, I'm in the wrong business. I should have, like, fabricated garage remotes and just sold that. If I could be a garage remote vendor here in Olea, I think I could probably do pretty well. They're like $80 now. Where does it end up? In their car up here. That's where it ends up. And then they don't even think about it until they're like, oh yeah, I probably should have left that. Right? And then what happens? Oh, well, we never got remotes, right? Or, you know, or a front door. Or we never had a refrigerator. I don't know what you're talking about, right? Pretty sure a front door wasn't there. All right. The due date for the security deposit. Let me ask you something. All right. Pay attention. In your state, it's all different in terms of how quickly you need to return the security deposits. In the state of Indiana, it's 45 days. Okay? It's 45 days. Some states it's as quick as 7. Some days you get 60, right? But it's kind of a sock drawer. Here's when when does the time start? Does the time start from when they move out, or does the time start from when the lease ends? It's from when they give the forwarding address. What did you say?
When they hand you the keys.
When they hand you the keys. Okay. Any other answers? Okay. Here's the answer. I don't freaking know. Because I'll tell you why. Because the judge that rules on this is the one that decides. So find out what it is in your area. I don't know. I don't have that answer. Because even what it says unless it's by statute, and where it says specifically when someone hands you keys, which no statute's that written that way, right? What determines possession? Well, what determines possession to me is if they no longer get in the house, which means if they have garage remotes, they can still get in the house. That makes sense to me, right? But if they handed me keys, does that mean that it's not possession? No, they still have garage remotes. So I don't know how to answer that question. Yeah, Ben.
What if about getting a letter from them returning possession to you?
That would probably be better. Yeah, a letter. But that, so what she said was, how about getting a letter from them that's returning possession to you? Not bad. That would probably be the best. How often would that happen?
Sometimes.
Not give us this, you're still renting the property, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to dictate that in the lease, exactly. So if you say, well, they lost the keys or whatever, or no, we were never given keys. Well, or the thing is, because it does say in our lease, I don't want to get down this rabbit hole, but what it does say in the lease is no return keys, all this other stuff. But the thing is, the reason why this is on the vacancy checklist is because you have other things to think about. This is why this checklist works. Now, here's the thing. Who should be working this checklist? You guys should, right?
Somebody else.
Wrong. Somebody else, exactly. Somebody else should be doing this, because when someone else is doing this, you guys can be going out doing what? Enjoying your time wealth. Going doing deals. Blowing out birthday candles. Whatever it is, right? Absolutely. You guys can be doing other things. So you should not be doing this. And I'm going to be honest with you. Some of you suck at details. You really do. Who really sees the benefit of a checklist? Go ahead. Okay, a couple of you. All right, most of you. Who does everything in their power to not follow a checklist? That's me. All day long. And I'm like, oh, man. Like, I will literally go do, you know, I'll go do meaningless things so I don't have to go look at the checklist. Yep. I'm not gonna ask anybody to indict themselves, but that's exactly what happens. So due date on the security deposit, that's what we're gonna look at next in the vacancy checklist. But I physically write that down when we actually do get possession, because that 45 days, and we want to send it out at 40 days, just in case something goes sideways. Photos and video documentation. The photos and video documentation. Now, who's taking photos after the possession? Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Who's doing videos? A couple of you. All right. Let me ask you if you have this problem with your videos. So you take the video, and we do videos at every change of possession. Every change of possession. At move-in, we do a video. Move-out, we do a video. Now, that sounds pretty cool, right? You know what's not cool? Man, where the hell's that video from when they moved in? Oh, I think it was on that phone that I dropped in the lake. Right? Does that sound familiar? It's just me. I know none of you do that. This is what I used to do, though, is I would forget to take the video off the phone. So you have to have a consistent way, a consistent method of categorizing and finding these videos before and after. Why is that? Because it's going to be that one time where someone says, no, you know, there was no garage door, there was no overhead door in that house when we moved in. Oh, really? So it just happened to get ripped off and is laying in the garage the entire time? That didn't happen. So this is why videos are really, really important. So I'm going to give you literally a 30-second tutorial on this. Now, how do most people shoot Instagram videos? They hold their phone like this. How do you shoot a video at move-in? Like this. Orientation matters. Why is that? Because you just get a broader photo of that, and with the capabilities on these phones right now, you can zoom in really super close. But pay attention to what you're doing, because some people are literally walking through a video. I'm watching the move-in videos, and they're literally like this. They're waving their phone around, and I'm getting vertigo. I'm getting like a hurl on the TV or on the computer screen, because they're like, yeah, and they're talking with their hands, and you know, it's like, all right, you know, stop for just a second and realize that you actually have to do this. You literally need to move robotically as you're going through the house, through the property. You're looking through the lens. Please be aware that you're doing this for documentation purposes. You're not just there at someone's birthday party going, oh, yeah, come on, Tommy. No, you have to put yourself in a different state when you're videoing this, okay? I like to go top to bottom, left to right. Top to bottom, left to right. The reason why is I tend to think that our eyeballs scan a room naturally from left to right, and we don't naturally go scan a room from top to bottom. And I literally just go through it like this, just a big W the whole way through. Think of W as you're going through this. Make sense? All right? Nice and slow. And I also, in the beginning of the video, what do? I said the date. Which I usually forget the date, so I have to do it again. But I'll have to start there. Like, what the hell date is today? Do the date, full date, including year, and indicate if it's a move-in or move-out video on that date. Make sense? All right, and then you categorize it and find a way to do it. Now, I like to put them in Dropbox. I like to link them automatically to Dropbox off my phone, and that's a great way that you can do that. All right, so photos and video documentation. I do a turn inspection checklist. I don't have time to get into the turn inspection checklist right now, but the turn, what's a turn? Turnover, right. So I stole that from the apartment industry. They call them turns. Turns is just basically where you're making the property ready. So the turn inspection checklist, now this kicks off another checklist. This kicks off another checklist. So yes, this is a checklist referencing another checklist. Do I have any pilots in the room? Do I have any pilots in the room? No? Where? Oh, okay, yeah, okay. So do, in terms of a pilot checklist, right, there are checklists that reference other checklists, right?
There are checklists for everything.
Literally everything.
Everything.
Absolutely.
Take off everything.
Absolutely. So you take off, right? And so I was a navigator in the Marine Corps, and we literally had checklists that would reference other checklists. So it's like you get to a certain point, and it's like, oh, wait, now reference this checklist. And there's literally, just like Eric said, there's literally checklists for everything. And this is what you're trying to do. So now we're referencing a checklist off of the vacancy checklist. So the turn inspection checklist means someone takes this checklist and goes to the property and does the inspection, and what are they doing? They're figuring out what turn needs to be done at that point in time. Okay? So next, we're going to go, we're going to put the for rent sign. Does anybody use any self-showing boxes like Rentling? Okay? A couple of them. Some markets, they're really, really good. Some markets, not so much. And then when I started getting rid of the dogs with fleas in the lower end market, that I was so much more capable of using like Rentley boxes and things like that. They were much easier to use. The lower end market, I really, really struggled, and I think it's just because many of them don't have credit cards. But the Rentley boxes are definitely something that you can. The self-showing boxes are really cool. Advertising initiated. Now the advertising. Many of these are being syndicated out by property management software. This is where the infrastructure piece comes back into play. Infrastructure, you have to, I promise you guys, I know that you're going to reject paying that $11 a month for property management software, but for crying out loud, please don't. Please don't be that landlord. Oh, I'm going to save money and I'm going to do it myself. I promise you, even a bad piece of property management software is better than the Excel spreadsheets that you're doing right now. It is, and there's some that are pretty good. I'm not going to endorse any here right now, but a couple of them, you've got RentAware, you've got TenantCloud, property management software systems. You're going to have AppFolio, which for a long time I didn't really like, but they've really, really stepped up their game. Yeah, some AppFolio has actually gotten really cool. I will tell you, like Yardie Breeze is, in my opinion, a little expensive, but it's actually not bad software. I think it's expensive for what it is, but it's actually not bad. You've also got, I don't recommend any of the RealPage ones right now. RealPage would be Buildium or RentAware. But we even use PropertyBoss for a number of years. I think for most people who are not doing property management services specifically, PropertyBoss might be a little bit too much of overkill. But there's lots of different choices, but every single one of them will syndicate the listing out to other rental sites. Okay, now not all of them will. It's really I know the API for a lot of people who's using Facebook Marketplace right now. Okay, we started doing that, but there's a lot of software that systems that don't integrate, that don't have that API to that. So you may actually have to do that on your own. But the whole point of this is that your advertising is initiated. Then you get utilities. Has anybody ever realized the joy and fun it is to talk with utility companies right now? Isn't that the best? Literally, it's like a hug every time you get to talk to them. Fortunately, I don't have to do that because I have other people that do that, but literally it's like 40 minutes of your life just being gone. So just plan on filling out your Christmas or birthday cards while you're on the phone with them, or someone else is doing this for you. But honestly, this should not be something that you're doing. Why do I care about this? Well, now gas services, do I turn them on all the time? No. Between the months of October and April, I do. But between April and October, I don't. Because we don't need it, because we're not worried about pipes being frozen. So we don't necessarily need to mess with that. Mowing and snow removal vendor ordered. Why is that important?
You don't want anybody to somebody slipping.
You don't want anybody slipping and falling? Code enforcement. How does this look? Yeah, go ahead and pull up to this house for the showing. Just wade through the grass on the way to the house. Because that's going to show it the best, right? No, get your mowers out there. Make sure the mowers are out there at least on a 10-day cycle. They don't necessarily need to do it every week, but every 2 weeks in some of these markets, it's just too long. Guys, don't be ridiculous in terms of like, well, I'll save $20 by not sending them out there an extra week. No, come on, man. This is your property. Again, what are we doing? We're managing our vacancy, which means that we're selling time. We got to get that back as quick as possible. The vendor and maintenance is coordinated. So the vendors and maintenance are coordinated off of the turn inspection checklist. So the turn inspection checklist, now think about this for a second. The turn inspection checklist says, oh, you know, we got to do a carpet cleaning. We got to paint a couple of rooms. And generally what I do is I don't do a full paint every single time. We do the same color every single time because I'm not interested in trying to make this different every single time. I want to use the same paint, the same brand every single time. I'm not trying to match paint. That gets to be a nightmare. This is just what I do. I want to turn these things as quick as I possibly can. To steal something from the hospitality industry, do they clean and paint these rooms every single time? No, they probably paint them once every 4 years. But what do? They have wallpaper. They have wall coverings that literally look at the room when you go back to it. Or whatever, wherever you're staying. You'll look back at the room and say, like, hey, hang on a second. If they turn these really quickly, what do they have? Well, they have a wall covering that doesn't take a lot of maintenance, right? And that's why, again, you might think, oh, God, wallpaper, I don't want to deal with that. But there isn't. I'm not suggesting wallpaper, but I do like flat paint. Why do I like flat paint versus anything else? Because you can touch it up. And it doesn't look like you've got a thumbprint on a mirror. It doesn't. There's no reflectivity to it. That's why I like flat paint, because I can always touch it up. Well, most times. So the turn inspection checklist is completed. So notice what I've done here. I've made a pretty big leap from vendors and maintenance coordinated to the turn inspection is completed. So that's a pretty good jump in there. Now, what's probably happening during that time, especially right now with the way... with the way that people are calling their rental properties, you're getting blown up. You're getting blown up going, hey, can I see this place? Hey, can I see this place? So I would really suggest not showing the property until sometimes you can get it showable. Sometimes you can get it showable. I like it when it is done. When it is done, I am not setting my leasing agent up to fail. And you might be thinking, well, who's my leasing agent? Because I'm my leasing agent. No. I know what it is, but the number of realtors out there are breeding like Catholic rabbits. Yes. There's a lot of realtors out there all of a sudden. Have you guys noticed this? The population has exploded. And it is, there's a lot of young realtors out there that are just trying to get their name out there. And guess what they're trained in? Showing properties, but what else are they trained in that I care about?
Fair housing.
Fair housing. And why is that relevant to you?
So you don't get in trouble.
Good. Guys, lawsuits are the new form of lottery. Mm-hmm. Lawsuits are the new form of lottery, and you need to be able to protect yourself. Thank you. You need to be able to protect yourself from someone who's going out there that says, just because you built something cool, they want to take it. I learned that from Yellowstone. By the way, tomorrow's my birthday. Yellowstone's coming back. I know. So the thing about that is you really have to be careful about having your maintenance guy show your property or somebody that's not really trained in fair housing. And if you're not trained in fair housing, you need to be. You really need to know fair housing law because it doesn't even have to make sense. It's just and you're wrong. In some states, you're just wrong for being a landlord. Just plan on that. Fortunately, in Indiana, we don't really have that problem so much, but it is a growing concern. So the turn inspection checklist is completed. Now we got the cleaning. We're going to go ahead and order the cleaning. The security deposit is returned. Now, again, some of this is a little bit out of order, but the reason why I have the security deposit returned, again, is this a do list or a checklist? It's a checklist. This is not a do list. So there are some things that may be out of order. I might go ahead and say, this property is really, really good. I can go ahead and return the security deposit right away. Do I have to wait until I get to it on a checklist? No, it's not a do list. It is a checklist. For those of you who are interested in creating your own, more of your own checklist, I recommend the book, The Checklist Manifesto, The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. It is amazing. It's actually a book written by a vascular surgeon on how to create techniques so there'd be less central line infections. And I was like, that all sounds really gross. But, okay. And I listened to this guy, and it is really, really good. So the Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. Really, really good stuff. So the security deposit is returned, cleaning is completed and inspected. Now that cleaning is completed and inspected. Generally, I would have that done by the same person who's doing the showing. So if they've said it's done and they're walking through there, I don't do a separate inspection. If they're going to go do the showing, hey, how's the cleaning? And they missed a couple things. Okay, send them back over there, clean the blades in the ceiling fan or whatever else it is. Okay, that's how we handle that. The property photos are updated. By the way, let me go back to this really quickly because I know you're thinking, well, how do I pay this realtor? You can pay them any way you want. Some people might just be, you know, $10 or $15 an hour, you know, to have them sit at a house for 90 minutes. And by the way, that's the way to do it, because you stack people up, you let them go gladiator on the front yard. You're like, hey, I don't care. All I'm here is to answer questions. You hand your realtor an FAQ of what the typical questions that they're going to have, right? That 10 or 12 things. All this is in the book, by the way. But 10 or 12 different things of questions that they're going to have. You know, what are those questions? You know, well, can we work at, can we, oh, I can clean for you. Can I clean out, you know, work off the deposit? No. No, they don't do that.
For the utilities.
Yeah, how much are the utilities? What's that? What's included? What kind of things are included? So you're going to ask, you know, how long is the lease? You know, they're going to have all these sorts of little questions that they're going to have. But generally, they're mostly, if you think about it, how many questions are they really asking? Are they usually the same 10 or 12 questions? Almost always. I've been doing this for 20 plus years. It's always the same questions. So you can have that written down in an FAQ, give it to this person who is your leasing agent, and do I care if they hand out their realtor card? No, I don't care. Hey, when you're ready to buy a property, go ahead and surely give me a call. Right? That's a win-win for them. And I might give them as much as half a month's rent as a commission for a signed lease. That seems fair, because I would have to pay that to a property manager anyway. So if I bake that in the cake in my underwriting when I bought the property, now all of a sudden it's not this big burden. All right. So cleaning is completed and inspected. Property photos are updated. Now, I say this as needed. If you bought a property in December in Akron and you're taking a photo of it from the outside, does it look amazing? No. No. It's not going to look amazing. It's going to look dead. It's going to be functional at best. Are there times where you're going to need to update your photos? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you're going to, if you replace the front door, if you replace the freshen up the mulch and all that stuff, you want to have the best photos in the front of that property. If you, on occasion, you're going to replace flooring and things like that in your property, correct? You want to have the best photos. So you're going to upload property, the property photos are going to be updated in the market, and they're going to be uploaded to your property management software. Now you're going to do a property analysis. Now we're going to talk about this in just a second, but the property analysis is where you're going to be, let me check my time here, the property analysis is going to be something we're going to talk about here a little bit, because when you're looking at the property analysis for leasing, but for continuing on, you want to make sure that property is still the best function and use as a rental property for you. So you can do the property analysis. We'll get into that in a second. The property is leased, the move-in data set, you do the actual move-in. When you're doing the move-in, what are you doing? What did I talk about earlier? Moving video, okay, moving video. And then utilities are shut off because what's really cool is forgetting to shut the utilities off and then trying to get that money back from your resident. That's fun, right? That's my favorite activities. Mowing, snow removal vendor canceled. The for rent sign showing box retrieved because how many times has that happened when you forget to get your $150 sign back and you're like, oh crap, where are all my signs? That sucks. Advertising is canceled because you don't necessarily need to keep that up because you don't necessarily need to keep your phone ringing about a property that's no longer available. Vacancy checklist is complete. Now, that's day one. That's from day zero to day one. Let's move on quickly from day one to day seven. Day one to day seven is the onboarding process. If you get this right, and this was a study that was done by Apartment, I think it was Apartment Guide or Apartments.com, one of the two. But you know when a resident is making a decision about renewal? 70% of the time they're making that within the first 30 days. And I found that to be shocking. Now, granted, it may not always be the case in your market, but what if that were even half true? So does it make sense that you want to get the onboarding process right? Now think about this when you're onboarding, where it used to be, this is kind of how it was like, you know, this is the way I do it. I know none of you did it this way, but it was like you throw the keys at them and then you shut your phone off and pray to God you never hear from them again until they're actually ready to pay rent. Okay, I know it's just me, it's not anybody else in this room. But when you see that phone call, you're like, oh crap. But what if, for example, that 3 days in, you called them and said, how's everything going with the house? Right? Now why 3 days? I don't know, it worked for Jesus. I don't know what else to tell you, but 3 days is a good date, okay? I like the fact that I'm getting in front of them before they have a chance to come at me. Because if they moved in on a Friday and I'm calling them on Monday, and I call them Monday morning, hey, how did things go? And they're like, oh, man, it's just been rough. My husband hurt his back. I'm like, oh, really? Does he need a massage therapist? Or, you know, I know somebody in town that does that. Or a chiropractor. Or a dentist. Or, oh, your car's not working? Because that sucks. Because that's what happens when you move. Everything else falls apart. Like, oh, you need a mechanic. What if they moved from Akron to your town, right? Or from wherever your town is, if you're not in Akron, but they moved out of town. They don't know anything. They don't know vendors in that area. So help them out. They are your customers. Take good care of them. This is a people business. This is not about real estate. It's about people. And if you're like, well, I don't care about people, then get a chief of staff or someone that can do this that actually does care about people. Because this is the way it's going to work. Yes, ma'am.
I actually like it if something small happens in the first week so I can quickly fix it and they say, oh, I've got the best landlord ever.
Absolutely, yes. So you go out and you'll break a window, right? You'll throw a brick through a window. It's a perfect example. Yeah, so she goes, what she'll do is she'll go let the air out of their tires. And like some vandal let the air out of my tires. It's crazy. So it's really cool that you do that, that you help them out, though. No, but the point is you do get to them right away, right? You get to them right away. Okay, please don't sabotage them. All right, so this is going to move a little bit faster from day 7 to day 30, okay? From day 7 to day 30, this is where, now again, I'm shocked at the number of people that do this, and I don't want to get into an argument about this, and so if this is what you're doing, it's fine. But why in the world would you not prorate your rent? Like, to the first day of the month. Because I have people that are like, oh, I like getting them sprinkled throughout the month. Ay, 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 man, you're never going to be able to scale. You're never going to be able to scale to a way that's not super complex or confusing. The math is not that hard. I graduated the top 98% of my class. I let that math sink in. Yes, I was 356 out of 358. Yes, I'll own that, okay? Top 98% of my class. I'm not a super math whiz, but I can figure out prorated rent, okay? It's not super complex. So please make sure that, now what am I doing when they're moving in? What am I charging? Am I charging the prorated rent? No, you're charging the first month's rent up front, and they get the prorated credit in the second month. So they get to charge the first month's rent up front, and you're getting the prorated credit in the second month. So when day 30 comes, it's the first time they're actually paying rent. It might be a prorated rent, but this is the first time they're paying rent. So now we have another cycle that's going to kick in here, is to say, okay, do you have a grace period? We do. We have a 3-day grace period. On the fourth day, it charges, okay? But if you don't want to do that, it's up to you. But the collection cycle has to check in, and it has to be defined. Who is working this? Not you. Not you. Someone else. And this is easy. This is why you need a virtual assistant or somebody else that can do this for you. All right. So let's move on from day 30 to day 245. So I want to get into this, and this is one of the things that's really, really important when you're getting into the day 245 checklist. So day 245. Day 245 is 120 days prior to lease expiration on an annual lease. I don't care if you're on an 18-month lease or 14-month lease or whatever the lease is that brings you back into your leasing cycle. So if we all have a leasing season in our markets, generally, would everybody agree with that, right? When it's ideal to rent your property. Okay, so if you happen to have a vacancy in October, you might end up with a weird, squirrely 17-month lease because you don't want a less than a year generally, but you could go longer, so it brings you into it brings you back into leasing cycles. Make sense? Okay. So day 245 is generally 120 days prior to the lease expiration. Why do I want to start it that soon?
Marketing
for the next resident. Okay. What else? Getting the property ready?
Raising
the rent. Okay. All right. Here's what I do. I look at it three different ways. These are all great answers. I'm going to help you organize your thoughts a little bit. Here you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You can give that as a good Christmas present, stocking stuffer. Okay. All right. So here's what you're going to do with day 245. First of all, you're going to do a market analysis. You're going to first of all do a market analysis. Market analysis is, let me make sure I got this down. Okay. This says day 30, but that's incorrect. It's actually day 245, so the slide is wrong. But this is what you're going to do. Market analysis, property analysis, and a resident analysis. Okay. What am I doing on the market analysis? You're looking at the market rents. Okay, very good. Okay, you're welcome. So you're looking at market rents, but I would take a step back even further than that right then. What I'm looking at right then is, what is my property worth? What is my property worth? Why am I thinking that right now? Now, I know all of our properties, even though you paid $70,000 for it last year, I know that it's worth $1.5 million today. I know. I get it. We all get that, right? What would someone else reasonably pay for it, though? What would someone else reasonably pay for it?
And lots more in this market.
Right, lots more in this market.
So
what I'm saying is, right now our equity has outpaced our rents in most markets. Okay? Why do I care about that? Because I want to look at this from a perspective of return on equity. I want to look at the return on equity of my properties and say, okay, well, what's the return on equity? Should I look at leveraging my property? Should I look at selling my property? Is this still the best use of my equity for my property? Now, I'm a very debt-averse person because I got my butt kicked really hard in 2008. And I crawled through a sewer to try to get out of that. I didn't declare bankruptcy. I was just morally opposed to it. I literally clawed my way out of that. Everybody got something. Everybody got something. That's all I can tell you. And if you got in line, you got something. If you didn't get in line, sucks to be you. But if you got in line, you got something. Because I didn't want to do that to some of these people. I mean, I paid all my vendors in full, but some of the banks, get in line, man. Get in line. I'll pay you what I can. And it was about 2 years ago, I finally paid off the last deficiency judgment. And I'll tell you what, that was an amazing day. Because it just sucked. So I wanted to see, in terms of my, like right now, I might consider getting some debt on my property. I might consider selling it, maybe doing a 1031. But I'll tell you what's really cool is signing checks on the back. That's cool, because I'm sick of signing checks on the front. And when I get to the promised land where all my stuff is paid off, I'm going to change my name to a symbol. I'm just going to start wearing a muumuu everywhere I go, and boots. So that's awesome. But So I want to do a market analysis. So the market analysis, I'm going to not only check and see what the property is worth, but I also want to see what the rents are doing in my neighborhood. Next, I'm going to move on to a property analysis. The property analysis specifically is, now again, because I did the rents analysis, now I'm going to the property analysis specifically. What does the property need? Am I going to have to put in a driveway soon? Am I going to have to put a roof on the property? What's going on with the property? Did they tear down a property on either side of me and now building up, and are now building condos on either side of my building, right? Do I have the best property in the worst neighborhood or the worst property in the best neighborhood? Then I'm going to go and do the resident analysis. Now, resident analysis, what am I checking for? Okay? I'm going to check, there's a meter that I check. It's called the pain in the ass meter. How much of this person is a pain in the ass? Right? Like, do I really want to work with this person anymore? Now, some of you are in markets that you're stuck. If you don't have a compelling reason to throw them out, you can't. And that's only in a couple of the communist states. But unfortunately, that's where you're at. But most states, you still have an ability to check and see who you want to work with. That's not a problem. The resident analysis is really, really important because I'm going to look back and see if they pay rent late every single month, okay, do I even want to work with them? But something else that I do that not a lot of people do. Do I want to rely on the assumptions that I made 8 months ago to re-rent this to this person? Do I want to rely on the assumptions that I made 8 months ago to re-rent to this person? No. Because what could have happened? Oh boy, might have ran off with the babysitter. Oh girl, might have ran off with the pool boy. Or they lost their jobs. Or they got a pay cut. If you automatically send these people back through, and you don't at least re-underwrite them, meaning looking at their pay stubs, and they fail, that's on you. That's not on them. That's on you. You set them up to fail, and that is your fault. Yes, ma'am. Do you do the recommended analysis before the lease expiration? 120 days prior to lease expiration. So I'm doing this very, and do I charge them a fee? Yeah, I do charge them a fee. I charge them $100 renewal fee. Why is that? Because I've got expenses I have to pay for to re-underwrite them. And they're like, well, why do I have to pay this? Okay, you can move. I don't know what to tell you. But it's cheaper than moving. And I do charge them somewhere between $100 and $200. And with the several hundred units that I have, it's a substantial amount of revenue. But it also offsets our costs. So you should definitely be charging a renewal fee. Okay? What? No, I don't like that in the lease, the reason I don't like that in the lease is because I don't know what the resident fee, I don't know what it's going to charge, but the lease obligates me to that period of time. I'm not obligated to renew the lease. There's no obligation to that, so I don't do that. But if you want to feel better about it, you can put it on your website in terms of saying that there is a renewal fee or whatever.
Yeah. So
the question is, when do I present that to them? So what we'll do is, once we go through and we decide that we're going to renew the lease with them, we send them a renewal offer. And the renewal offer, at that point in time, is going to be, here's your new, congratulations, your lease anniversary is coming up. Here is the new rent. And the renewal fee will be $100 at that moment in time. If they don't sign it, and this will be a DocuSign, by the way. This is not like, oh, crap, it's July 5th, and I don't remember if I renewed my resident, right? That's generally how I used to do it. But now that I'm in front of this, if they haven't signed that new lease by 60 days prior, I pull the offer back, it hits the market. I don't mess around. And if you want to get someone that's going to be like, oh, no, we plan on staying. I'm sorry. We sent out 17 reminders via email, and you didn't respond to any one of them because you can do that on DocuSign. I can send one every single day. By the way, we're doing that at day 90. And if they're sending one every other day, one renewal, they're getting at least 15 reminders to sign this thing. So if they haven't signed it by day 60, pulling it off, putting it on the market. I'm sorry, I don't have time for that. We're selling time, we're not, because they're jerking you around is what they're doing. And I don't have time for that. Yes, ma'am.
Do I ever just let it go month to month?
Not in my market. I'm not saying it's not good for every market, but I don't in my market only because in my market, if I'm sitting on a vacancy, if someone moves out in November, it's going to sit till February. So in my market, that is not the case. Some other markets, if you're in Arizona, it may not matter. Okay, but generally I can tell you most markets have a leasing season, and I want to hit that leasing season. Okay? All right. So let's move on. So we went from day 245 to day 365. Now, at day 365, what happens? That decision is to say, okay, well, are these people moving out? Am I going to be having a vacancy at day zero, or is it going to go back to day one? So at this point, right here, where am I going? Am I going back to day zero, which is what? What's day zero?
Vacancy.
Very good. And what is day one?
The move-in,
right? But they're basically, at this point in time, what I'm going to do is... You're welcome. What I'm going to do is, am I going to go back through the whole cycle again? Yes, which means I'm also going to re-onboard them. Hey, how are things going? Checking in with them. Oh, yeah, I know it's part of a renewal. Oh, yeah, we're supposed to fix this thing. Okay, we're going to get out there. Whatever we want to get in front, take care of your customers. Okay? Any questions on this? Because we're going to move on. We only got about 20 minutes left, so I want to make sure I'm getting in those questions. Anything else real quick? Okay. All right. There's other cycles and other processes that operate outside of the leasing cycle that I didn't get a chance to talk about, and I can't really, there's just too much. But what are some other cycles? The application cycle. What's the application? Application, or basically an application checklist. What's on the checklist? What are some things that are on there?
Background check.
Make sure they can afford rent. A valid ID. Why is a valid ID important? You make sure you're running to the right person. And that should be self-explanatory. But I will also tell you that it is illegal to pull credit on someone that is not the person in front of you. And if you haven't validated that that's the person in front of you, you've broken the law, not them. And I'll tell you, we had a fair housing lawsuit against us, and it was just easier to settle. But it still cost us several thousand dollars because it was just easier to settle. Really wrong? No. But I was like, oh, for crying out loud, am I really going to fight this and make the lawyers rich? So you really have to be careful. So the application cycle. Don't have a lot of time to get into that. But the turn cycle. What's the turn cycle? Going through and checking each and every room, making sure each room. This is also why, in terms of your ideal, the asset class and the asset class selection. Remember we talked about that earlier? So the asset class, this is why it's easier to operate within the same asset class. Because if you're going to have a turn cycle, is a turn cycle a little bit different if you're going to use different asset classes? Yeah, it's going to be a little different. So all of a sudden you have to have this massively complex checklist to take care of other things, to take care of the different asset classes. So the turn cycle, this is why I like to keep it simple. The maintenance cycle. A maintenance cycle is what happens when a resident calls in and has a maintenance issue. When they have a maintenance issue. So generally how it goes, and most property management software systems are pretty decent at this. So a resident calls in, or emails in, or whatever it is, I do not like the function, this is just my personal preference, I do not like the function where the resident has the ability to create their own work orders. That sucks.
Yeah.
Because what are they going to do? At 2:30 in the morning, when they got a bone to pick with you, let's go ahead and send 38 irrelevant, maintenance work orders and just blow up the system.
So you don't like the portal where they can log in?
I like the portal where they can log in, but I don't like the portal where they can create their own maintenance issues. I really want them to call in. Well, why is that? Because what are they going to do? They're going to put this thing in that says, I have a dryer that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I have a water heater that doesn't. Right? You're like, okay, is it on fire? Is it stolen? Did the door fall off? What's it doing? Right? Because, dryer screws like pig. Okay, remove pig. Okay, check. Okay, what's it doing? So a lot of times it's up to us or my resident resources person to flush out what's going on with that dryer. Make sense? So I want, because when that maintenance work order goes to who after we enter it in, where does it go from there? It's going to a vendor or a maintenance guy. Because the vendor or maintenance guy doesn't have an idea in terms of what's going on. They might be walking into something completely blind. They have no idea what am I looking at? Right? And it's hard to know. What if it's an intermittent problem? They go and they can't recreate the problem, right? So this is where you're looking at. So the maintenance cycle is really, really, really important to delineate. Now that also bleeds into the accounting cycle. So the accounting cycle is when you're looking at the accounting cycle, here's what we're doing. Now remember, this is a people business. So what are we doing before we pay the bill? We're collecting rent, but before we pay the bill for the maintenance, make sure it's done. So who's checking to make sure it's done? We're calling the resident. Hey, we're just out there, and now think about this for just a second. Think about this for just a second. Put yourself in the place of the resident. If the problem was with the dishwasher, because the dishwasher was leaking on the floor, okay, do you think they're going to go in and try the dishwasher every day and see? No, because most of these maintenance guys will go in, fix the thing, and they leave. They don't generally leave something. If they do, what can happen is husband comes home and goes, cool, throws it away, and goes about his day. Meanwhile, the wife never sees this notice and never realizes, oh, wait, they were actually here. So what if, not you, but someone were to reach out and go, hey, we were out there yesterday fixing your dishwasher. Is it working? And they go, oh, we didn't realize you guys were here. Okay, well, check it out. Let us know. We'll leave the maintenance work order open a couple of days. If we don't hear from you, we'll just assume it's done. Right? Does that sound better? Is that a system? Are you taking care of your customers? How much did that actually cost you to do? $0, to be kind. $0, and you're being a good steward of your people here. So the accounting cycle is really, really important. So then it goes to the accounting cycle, and here's the thing. This is a question that was asked in the dealmakers forum: is how do you find and keep good vendors? This is the most crazy idea I've ever come up with. I pay them. I know, it's shocking, and I pay them fast. Does that mean I pay them net 45?
Nope.
Do I pay them net 30? They come and they get a check every week if they want. I don't pay them by the job typically, but I will pay them every 7 days. I have zero problem with that. And I will pay them fast. You know why? Because they'll come back to me. Mm-hmm. If you pay your people fast, they will come back to you. And the other thing is too, you may have vendors that are also really, really good at other things. I had a painter that was also a really good electrician, and he was licensed. He was able to work on the. Ask your vendors. If you've got a vendor that's really good and is like, hey, is there other stuff that you can do that, you know? And some of them may say, yeah, I'm a painter, but I don't mind spreading mulch or, you know, doing other stuff, you know, cleaning gutters and that sort of stuff. I mean, ask them, especially if you've got a relationship with them. Ask them, or you could use a simple vendor. A vendor survey. Yes, ma'am. It's 7 days after we know that it's been done. Yes. Yeah. So generally they would be paid if they turn it in by the Wednesday, they'll get paid by the following Friday. So a week from the following Friday. So if they turn it in, so Wednesday's the cutoff. You got to have a certain cutoff for the accounting cycle, otherwise your bookkeeper will end up taking a hostage, and you don't want that. All right. So the question that I run into all the time is, how are you the bottleneck? And this is where you have to start to be a really brutal about the things that you're going to do and the things that don't need to be done. So this is the order it has to happen. If you get nothing else from what I'm telling you today, please listen to this. You have to eliminate useless tasks. So if you have, let's say, does anybody send out like birthday cards to the residents? Anybody that does that? Okay. We used to do that. And then what I realized was, and this was back when I was like by myself, and I was running 92 rental units by myself. So I was sending out birthday cards. And they're like, oh, that's cool. You can send out a birthday card, but I have a refrigerator that hasn't worked in 3 weeks. So you can send out a birthday card, but you can't take care of my refrigerator. Gotcha. And I was like, that one stung. That hurt. Right? So when I'm not suggesting that sort of thing is irrelevant, but what I'm saying is you have to be brutal about the things that you hand off to someone else. And usually I hear it's like, well, I'm going to delegate it. If you're delegating a meaningless task, now you're playing with your own money, and just by giving this useless task to someone else does not make it important. So you have to eliminate tasks before you either automate them or delegate them. And why am I automating before I delegate? Why do I want to automate first?
So
Save money, okay. What else?
Save everybody.
Who said more consistent? Yeah, okay. So, Rich, you get the, I'm down to one last book after Rich. But they are. They're more consistent. They're much more consistent. Because I don't have to worry about, especially if I'm automating the process, I don't have to worry about if the thing got done in a certain way. Right? So you want to automate before you delegate. But what's the other reason, too? Why is delegating last? What's the largest expense on any company's income statement? Resources? Yep. You hand that down to her, please? Absolutely. It's the human component. It's the most expensive. It always is. I pay my virtual assistant, my chief of staff, $45 an hour. Now, I know that just for some of you, you know, yeah, you're like, oh, I can't imagine spending that. I love you folks. I love you folks. I do. But man, you're a little bit on the cheap side. I don't pay him. I pay her at a rate of $45 an hour. But if she was going to answer a phone call for me and say, oh, okay, cool, thanks for taking care of this, and hangs it up, and guess that task that took 3 minutes might cost me $7 or $5 or whatever the rate is, but I get to keep doing what I'm doing. Now, granted, you can get them cheaper. You can get them at $3, you know, $30 an hour. I'm not talking about a foreign VA that you're paying $5 an hour that you have to then worry if the towns go eight through the phone wires. I don't want to worry about that. For tasks, not a problem. But for critical tasks that where a phone needs to be answered, I don't want to worry about when they've got 3 inches of sewage in their living room and they can't get to somebody because of third world infrastructure. So there are places for that, but not when you're talking about timely infrastructure. So you have to eliminate, automate, and then you delegate. And it has to be in that order. So you have to stop. And just when you're thinking about where are you the bottleneck, specifically you have to think about this for just a second, is where does information have to flow through you in order for something to happen? Are you literally going to be the one, determining the paint color in the kitchen? Is that something that you really want to be doing? Is that something you really need to be doing? No, you shouldn't be. You should pick it once, and that's it. And then you know the paint color, and then your painter knows the paint color forever. Right? Then eventually, if you need to change it, that's it. But you doing this every single time is a massive waste of resources. Massive waste of your time. So where does information have to flow through you before something happens? Now, could I make an argument that I would want to know about a roof before? I can make that argument, absolutely. A capital expenditure item? Or am I going to spend this amount for this type of furnace or that type of furnace? Okay, yeah, I can make an argument for that. But not for the little stuff. And where that threshold lies is going to be different for every single person. So here's... We're gonna end here shortly, and I know that there's a lot of different things that I can bring you down, lots of different rabbit holes, and I appreciate your time and attention today. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I wanted to teach you not just how to play chess, but how to win, and not just win the game, but so you can also win at life. I love this quote: "Is to make the rest of your life the best of your life." I want you to go out. I want you to spend today getting really super hyper focused and got one thing in your vision that you're going to do. And I promise you, it has nothing to do with rental properties. I thank you guys. Here's my contact information. Have a great rest of your day.